CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Wall Street Journal. Donald Trump has been charged with willful retention of classified information, withholding a record, conspiracy, false statements, and obstruction, according to a 49-page indictment released in these last hours. Along with Mr. Trump is Trump's valet, Walt Nauta, who went to work at the Florida resort after working in the Trump White House, writes the Wall Street Journal. There is a judge assigned to the case, at least and here in the beginning, U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at University of Chicago and NYU. Richard, a very good evening to you. A former president has been indicted by the federal government for what looks to be serious felony charges that are routinely used successfully against people who have abused documents. Now, I ask you, there is an earlier indictment in Manhattan by the district attorney, Mr. Bragg. What is the difference? Do they compare and contrast between that moment, which was said to be unprecedented, and this moment? Good evening to you.
Yeah, well, I think the indictment that we saw with respect to Bragg was for show, and this one is to play for keeps. What Bragg did is he had a very threadbare case and a strong animus with respect to Mr. Trump, desperate for publicity in many ways. And so what he did is he concocted an indictment which is so threadbare that you have no idea what's going on. And he refused to even mention the second statute that was violated in order to make the records violation something more than a misdemeanor into a felony. And so he's going to be subject to all sorts of very complicated motions, which will, I think, eventually defeat that particular indictment. Jack Smith's a different kind of guy. I've not seen the indictment, but if it's 49 pages, my sense is, and it mentions this fellow who was involved in it, Mr. Nauta, chances are that what's happened is he's going to give a fairly effective chronology of what had happened in this case, which is designed to trap Mr. Trump into realizing that it's going to be extremely difficult for him to avoid, at the very least, the obstruction charges and maybe even some of the various kinds of espionage charges. Although I think the former obstruction case is going to be much stronger, the physical evidence requires you to have a relatively narrow compass. And if you show somebody taking boxes from a location where they were previously put, having gotten notice from the government that they're back, that shipment of stuff itself is enough to make the case out. I think the espionage case is going to suffer from serious problems. One is that nobody has ever been successful in a case like this under these kinds of circumstances. And second, if you actually look into what has happened, the movement of the documents is not accompanied, at least as yet, by either of two allegations. One, that he actually gave this information to a foreign power for its advantage and for his advantage. Or the other thing is that he put them in a position where some foreign power was able to gain access to them. In this regard, the case against Trump is weaker than the case against Hillary Clinton, because when she used her makeshift private server, perfectly clear that large numbers of people could get access to it by tapping in one way or the other. And so the risk of leakage is very, very much higher than it is here. And it's also the kind of documents that you're talking about. They're not stale, but they're certainly not current. Whereas in the Clinton case, anything that would be stolen off the server would be essentially something that was created literally that minute. So the value of the information would not depreciate over time, as is the case with respect to the Trump thing. But the first one is very, very serious. And there are very few defenses to it that one can imagine, because the defense that, well, Hillary got away with a lot of stuff is certainly true, and it may influence a jury, but it's not going to be able to quash an indictment which alleges what seems to be a fairly routine case of obstruction of justice, the kinds of charges with the, which the Justice Department is fully familiar with and well able to handle.
The process is ahead of us, but I want to check on details because this is a criminal case. The significance, Richard, the federal judge to hear the case is Judge Aileen Cannon, a federal judge in Florida. She was last year involved in this case, I believe, when she urged the appointment of special masters in the case that halted the FBI access. I'm following the Washington Post reporting. Is it significant that Judge Cannon was nominated to the bench by President Trump himself? Is that a factor in this story?
Well, I mean, it's always got to be a factor in these stories. I mean, I'm involved in litigation with respect to both former President Obama and with respect to President Biden. And the moment you have these kinds of things, everybody's going to ask that particular question. I think the best thing to do is to put it on hold and concentrate on the merits of the case. And the fact that she was a Trump appointee would not be plus or minus in any way. Otherwise, you could never, in effect, use a large portion of the judiciary. What was interesting was the most controversial ruling that she made, which you mentioned, which was to say, I'm going to take this mass of documents and refer it down to a special master to see which of them could be given access to the FBI and which not. That's not the standard procedure. The standard procedure is it gets the run of the stuff. And then when you start to prosecute, you want to introduce a doctrine which is not supposed to be in there. You bring a motion to suppress. And what she did is she tried to cut up the access very early on, which is widely regarded in the business as sort of inappropriate. And, you know, so I think, in effect, the government will have a legitimate concern. How it plays out, one never knows. Do you sort of remind the judge that she had gone beyond the norm the first time around? Do they move for reassignment? The word that you mentioned was initially, if I'm not saying, yes. Initial appointment.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that could be that it could be subject to switch because of some activity that takes place inside the circuit courts or the district courts themselves. So I think initially should be regarded as only weakly, presumptively, rather than as cert. But no matter who is going to be in charge of this particular case, there is going to be all sorts of evidence. One of the things that I've seen, and I don't know whether it's true, is a attack on NARA, the National Archives and Record Administration, but not affording Trump the usual services that they give. One of the best things that you do if you're a good defense lawyer is you always put the government on trial. Say, this is not us, this is you, and you have to defend yourself. Because otherwise what happens is the allegations all move in one direction, and if any of them get through, it turns out you're going to find yourself facing a hefty criminal storm. How this will play out, I do not know. I keep reminding myself I'm a professor of law, not a professor of facts, and so you have to see the record.
We look to the attorneys. There's news there. Two of Trump's top lawyers said within these last hours, this is Washington Post, that they were quitting his legal team, moments after the newly indicted former president said he would be bringing on new lawyers. In a joint statement, Jim Trusty and John Rowley, who visited the Department of Justice earlier this week to urge them not to indict Mr. Trump, said they had, quote, tendered our resignations as counsel to President Trump, and we will no longer represent him on either the indicted case or the January 6th investigation. The Wall Street Journal names former prosecutor Todd Blanche to lead the defense in the documents case. Mr. Blanche was earlier in the news because he is representing Mr. Trump in the Bragg indictment in Manhattan. Switching lawyers, is that routine? Richard, does that tell us anything?
It shows that Trump is deeply dissatisfied with what happened. Generally speaking, if there's a discontinuity with respect to lawyers, there's a serious disagreement philosophy between the client on the one hand and the lawyers on the other. So it surely indicates that there's a disadvantage to the Trump team, because the new fellow, even if he's worked for Trump under other issues, still has to bring himself up to speed. And he's not going to have the advice and the information that the previous lawyer had to guide him in his particular inquiry. Donald Trump is kind of notorious for this. There are many sort of charismatic leaders like Trump who can take over a room. But what often happens with people like that is after 18 months, their loyal servants just cannot take his erratic behavior anymore. And so what they do is they either quit or they fire you. Think of what happened to Rex Tillerson, for example, in the State Department. Could last. Pompeo did much better in terms of this. So the answer is yes, it's obviously a sign of discord. Whether it's a sign of panic, I do not know. One of the things that I'm not privy to, of course, is all of the substantive defenses that the Trump people are going to try to raise on this particular thing. All one can say from looking at the situation thus far is that everything that has been presented by the prosecutor seems to be supported by stuff in the record. And so this is not going to be an easy defense for Trump. He's going to have to both negate what's come out on one side and introduce some new stuff on his other side, which he thinks can switch the balance. And it's also, I think, a situation in which this case cannot be dismissed as a stunt. And so it might well create an erosion of his support base on this one, which would never happen with respect to Bragg, because the Bragg indictment essentially is a Trump asset when it comes to publicity, because it was so far out of the acceptable and standard reasons. There's nothing about this prosecution at this point that looks atypical, that looks politically motivated, however motivated it may be. And so I think, in effect, Trump runs a genuine danger, particularly as the record unfolds, of losing support through this case and maybe the January 6th investigation as well. That uneasy wears the head that carries the crown. I mean, it's just hard for him to fight all of these things off, because they've got stuff going in a way that Bragg does not.
It appears that the case will be held in Florida right now, and at least Mr. Trump is to surrender, is to appear before the court Tuesday in Florida, and the judge in charge of the case for now is in Florida. Richard, there's a conspiracy charge here, which is unusual given the scale of Mr. Trump's conduct. Mm-hmm. And I read from the Washington Post, federal authorities have charged a longtime aide, Walton Auta, to Trump, whose responsibilities include moving and carrying cardboard boxes in which the former president kept mementos and papers. Trump told us this on social media. And there's a warning. Much of this information is coming from Donald Trump, the defendant. And so, therefore, it is not certain. The indictment has been released. I have not seen it. Richard's not seen it. But conspiracy, Richard. That strikes me as a dangerous turn, because there's surveillance cameras said to be involved in this. And Mr. Nauta's fate is not necessarily tied to Mr. Trump's fate, correct?
Yeah, it's really bad. It's a kind of puzzle. When you said that there was a conspiracy charge before the show, I was thinking there'd be somebody who essentially had genuine authority to organize and to operate his particular operations, a high-ranking executive and so forth. It looks as though Mr. Nauta did routine administrative stuff, following orders, taking papers from one place to another. If it turns out that these papers contain lots of things that belong to Trump, it's not even perfectly clear to me that Trump told him that this is stuff which is being sought by the government. So he might not have the appropriate mental state of mind to sustain the conspiracy charges. I would think that in this particular case, it's a bit of a stretch pushing this kind of thought, because what happens is you can now find yourself being diverted to explain why he was a true conspirator, which you would never have to do if it was a confidential advisor at the highest level. So this thing sort of took me at a bit of a surprise. The real question in many cases is whether Mr. Nauta or whether anybody else in the Trump organization has been speaking to people inside the FBI and is prepared to either turn over documents or to give testimony that would implicate Trump in the way in which this thing works. So I would say at this particular point, my judgment is that this conspiracy count doesn't strengthen the case much. If anything, it might actually, in a strange way, turn out to weaken it. And this is not a co-conspirator of equal dignity, at least given the description that we've seen. But the fellow doesn't seem to have any policy roles or judgment in the cases that has come forward to the court.
The prosecutor's name is Jack Smith, special counsel. I believe he's also charged with investigating the January 6th investigation. What do we know about him, and what is the significance of the prosecutor?
Well, I gather he was very active in dealing with prosecutions of war crimes in the Hague or something of that sort. So he is a very seasoned and very tough-minded prosecutor. I think the choice of him by Garland was not an accident. The Biden administration would like to get Trump, and this is something which doesn't show any particular sign of obvious bias and so forth, but it is a very determined guy. There is still the ambiguous question as to what extent Garland can, should, or would exercise any control over this particular case. We don't even know at this point whether or not the indictment, as it's going to be filed, received a review and an approval from the Attorney General.
We have 30 seconds, Richard. Go ahead.
We don't know whether it got that kind of approval. So that all of this is mystery. But what we do know is, unlike Bragg, this man is a professional prosecutor, not a professional politician. And you will assume that he will not make any rookie mistakes in terms of the way in which he starts to handle the case. The Trump people may try to say, aha, this is really selective prosecution. And that's always a way to throw doubt on a particular prosecution, but it's not a way to stop it.
Professor Richard Epstein, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.